wasn't shy.
No, Zakaria, you can still get your point in. I'm happy to defer to your point. Sure you don't want to get in? Okay. So let's get to work. Share my screen. Gabe's keeping track. The Sarha Shonim, something like that. Okay, so let's get deep into our Nater Kid Natri Inchi discussion. I want to go back to the Gemara for one moment here and make a few comments about the Meiri's Shita. So we saw last time the Rabba standard. The Rabba standard is that a Shomer, again, a Shomer Sachar, it seems from context of the Gemara, a Shomer Sachar is going to be Pater if he is Natar Kedinatri Inchi, so long as he executes or maintains the standard of care of Natri Inchi. Now, of the views of the explicit views in the Rishonim that we've seen, the Meiri, I think, is the clearest view. He thinks that Natri Inchi is Kedinatri, Balabatim Bishelahem, what your standard property owner, the standard of care that he exercises with his own things. And according to Rabbah, a Shomer Sachar is only held to that standard and to that standard and not more. Beyond that, he has this defense that my Havli Lamevid, he abided by the standard of care, and that's sufficient. Okay? So that seems to be a pretty low threshold for a Shomer Sachar. All he's got to do is what a Bialim normally does with his own stuff. Meiri was explicit about this, just to remind you of his formulation. The Meiri said, Shomer Sachar, Dayul Inyan Ptur Onsin, Sheyishmar Kederach Sharo B'nei Adam Shomrem Es Shelahem, V'chol She'iru Ones B'Shmira Kazu, Alf B'Shai Efshel Lishmar B'derach Shelohi Ones Ba Pater. It doesn't matter that he could have exercised a higher degree of Shmira and that higher degree would have prevented the Ones. What matters is that he exercised this Shmira kederech sheyishmor rov bnei adam bishelahem, and that's sufficient for the shomer sachar. And he's going to be pater for everything beyond that. Everything beyond that will be considered an ones. Now, two Amoraim, probably three, took issue with Rabba's standard. Rav Chista and Rav Bar Rav Huna offered an alternative standard. They said that the real standard is netirusa yisirsa, and they connected this to the notion of the shomer sachar's paid. So I think this makes a lot of sense on the Meiri standard, because if Natri Kedinatri Inchi means what most people exercise Bishelahem, then it stands to reason that payment should bump the Shomer Sachar into a higher category. Does that make a lot of sense to you guys? So there's something about being paid which makes him more liable than Rov HaAnashim Bishelahem. Now, the thing that was troubling us last Chabura, that we weren't sure about last Chabura, is what exactly is this Netirusa Yisersa standard supposed to describe? And we offered two different ways of characterizing it. One way is to say that it means a certain degree of professional shmirah. So let's say the standard is like, what are expert watchmen exercising? Like, what's the going standard for Shomrei Sachar? Be something along those lines, which is, a little more or a lot more than what people exercise with their own stuff, but it's still relativized to like the going standard of care in, let's say, the Shomer Sachar industry. That was one way of reading this view, and I thought that maybe there's grounds for this in the Ravid, in the Shita Mekubetzes. The Ravid said, even if Rov Haroim, which he seemed to say referred to Shomer Chinams earlier, Lasos Kach Mikol Makom Chayiv Shomer Sachar, Im Shomer Chinam Osim Kein, Shomer Sachar Lo Hayalem Lasos Kein. So the idea might be that a Shomer Sachar is held to just a higher standard than the Shomer Chinam, than what people do with their own things. But it's still tethered to, let's say, a certain standard of care within the Shomer Sachar industry. And that's kind of what the Ravid had in his Hava Mina, He said, "Im derech haroim lishen bayom ma'ata behemos roos ayedayim, lama lo yehezeh pater." So like in his havamina of the Rav, it was pretty clear that if there's a certain standard of care in the industry, that should be sufficient for the shomer. And then just what he changes in his maskana is that he thinks that maybe the shomer chinam industry shouldn't be indicative for the shomer sachar industry. That's one way of reading the Netirusa Yeserza standard. The contrasting way of reading it, just to come back to the Gemara, is that Netirusa Yeserza picks out almost like an absolute standard, meaning if you're being paid for your job, then you're supposed to exercise the highest amount of shmira possible that would prevent any foreseeable onus, that would prevent any foreseeable or any reasonable event from harming the item. You're only going to be pater if it's the kind of thing, to borrow the Rambam's phrase, she'ein tachbula limona. Like there's literally nothing reasonable that you could have done to block the onus from occurring. And that's a much higher standard. That's like almost like an absolute standard. Does everybody see that? That's the second way of reading the Tirusa Yeserza. Is everybody clear on the two different ways of reading it? Just not like what supports each view, but just literally the basic distinction between those two readings of the Tirusa Yeserza. Okay, good. I see Gabe gave me a thumbs up. Anybody else give me a thumbs up? Cole, we can't see. Okay, Evan gives me a thumbs up. Zachariah,
I'm giving you a thumbs up.
Great. Zachariah, good with you also? Great. Adin? Okay, I'd ask Ami, but... Oh, Ami's giving me a thumbs up. There we go. Look at that. We're getting from Yakir a thumbs up. Okay. Now, I want to make a diuk. I'm curious to hear what you think. This is, I think it's a nice diuk. But tell me, I want to hear your view on this. So I just noticed it this morning. So the Gemara says, when it quotes Rav Chisda and Rabbi Rav Huna's view, "Lahachi yavi lecha aga l'neturi l'netirusa yaserasa." So the key word here is yaserasa. So calling all Aramaic experts, what does the word yaserasa mean?
Yoter.
Yeah, I think that's what it means, right? It means more. Jastro, who I consulted this morning, tells me that it means additional, superfluous, right? Something in that lexical world. Cole, you have something to add?
I'm not a philologist.
Okay.
But I did know what the word meant.
Yeah, so right, I think it means, you know, additional shmira. To my mind, that speaks to this notion that there's like a Shomer Chinam Bailin Bishelahem standard, and the Shomer Sachar is expected to do more because he's paid, right? So the crucial thing for the Gemara is that the standard for a Shomer Sachar be higher than the Shomer Chinam without taking a clear stand, like without necessarily moving us to this absolute standard of extraordinary Shmira. It's just the main point that the Gemara is making is that it's got to be more than Natri Inshi B'Shelahem, and that's captured by Netirusa Yeserza. If you look at the Rif, when he paskins this Gemara, so, by the way, you know what I love? I love when you read a Sugya, and you kind of have a sense of, like, what's important and what's not important, right? So you have, like, when I read this Gemara on Sadi Gimel, we have Rabba's view, but that's like the important sheet. And then you have like the view of like the other Amoraim who disagree, right? So it's nice when like the riff cuts out like exactly those parts of the Gemara, you know, that you are willing to gloss over also. So the riff here just writes, I tell you, Dr. Grach used to tell us that he thinks you should do Daf Yomi with like just like Daf Yomi of riff, because then you get like all the essentials of the Gemara. How was that?
That was apparently what they used to do, like in the Rambam's time. Like the Rimigash would like give like riff shiurim for like that, right, would be like what like the Balabatim would learn.
Yeah, that was the equivalent of like their 10-minute halacha. You know, it's like you want to get the halachic upshot. You learn through the riffs. I'm just kidding. That wasn't their equivalent of their 10-minute halacha. That was the equivalent of like their Yerideya shiurim. You know, that's the real comparison. Okay. So the riff here, when he quotes the Gemara, he quotes Rabbah, Menachik and Natri and she. When he quotes Rav Chista and Rabbah Ravura, he says, Lo Sri Luha de Rabbah, Damar Lech, Yavil Ha'agal and Naturi, Lina Tirusa Ma'alya. So I think that's a pretty interesting word change. In the Gemara, you just get it's like this additional Shmira. And in Rav Chista and Rabbah Ravua, in the riff's version, it's to watch for me like an excellent Shmira. That's what Ma'alya. Again, consulting Jasher. Jasher has a few definitions there, but I think the idea here is like it's to do an excellent job for me. And to my mind, that might move towards like the objective standard, right? If I'm paying you, you're held to a standard of excellence. The point is more than just like, oh, you ought to do more than a Shomer Chinam does. Like, no. Like as Gabe was telling us last week, like you're being paid for your job. You have to exercise like the best kind of Shmira, but that can be exercise. Gabe, do you agree with this, Dia? Does this resonate with you?
Yeah, that's what I always thought we were getting at when you bolded and underlined that word in the riff.
Okay, so you had a chance to see the riff before the Chabur today.
Yeah.
Nice, great, excellent. Where did we find you today? You look like you're like maybe in a sauna or something there with like the wood panel back or something.
Our finished basement is glorious, but we don't have a desk, so I'm sitting on the floor.
Got it. I like the wood paneling. Looks nice. Great. So I think that's maybe a nice way of bringing out this distinction. Now, one way of testing these two different standards of two different interpretations of the standard of Niti Rusa Yisera is to try to figure out this last case that the Gemara had, the Bar Adda Sabula case, which many Rishonim think, which I think the standard view is that this is supporting the Rav Chista, Rav Bar Rav Huna standard of Niti Rusa Yisera. So Evan, you want to just take us through this case again very quickly, the Bar Adda Sabula case?
Yeah. So inside, yeah, or
yeah.
Just, all right, so Rav Adda is, pretty much the idea is we're at the end of the Rav Chisda, like after one step after that, and so Rav Adar Sabla Havika Maver Chidag was the Nara. So this guy was passing his cattle over some bridge. The Chavakad Lechaverta Veshad B'Maya. So one of the
I think he was passing somebody else's cattle.
He's a shepherd or shomer in this situation. So one of the animals hits the other one off the bridge or whatever and kills it. So Rav Papa was Mechayev, the Shomer. Amar Le, he responds, Mahavi Lema Aved, right? Similar to it, to the original Nar de Papa case, the river. And the response is, Amar Le, Avalach, Lavure, Chada Chada. Like there is some sort of I guess the Freeman, what you just said, you see Rasa that they could have done to make sure that the animals didn't knock one another off.
So this is crucial. This is crucial because the shepherds argued the defendant's claim is my habli lamevad, right? Like, what should I have done? And the plaintiff's claim, which I guess, you know, or Papa as the Dayan likes, is you should have taken them one by one, correct? Now, given that, this next line is crucial. What does the defendant say?
Is there anyone who actually does that?
That's right, meaning, do you know anybody of your kin, right? Like Rashi says, do you know anyone who actually takes the cattle one by one over the bridge to avoid this risk? Now, it seems like Rav Papa concedes that point, right? What does Rav Papa answer? Oh, we've heard this taina before, and like, you know, we're not concerned about this taina. I think that answer is interesting. We'll talk about that answer in one moment. But Rav Papa seems to concede the point that nobody takes their cattle one by one over the bridge. And yet he holds the Shomer Chayiv. So Kipshuta, when you just read the story of the Gemara as is, which interpretation of Nitirusa Yaseirsa does the Gemara seem to be siding with? Gabe, are you unmuted about this? I know. Okay, I thought you had a comment there. So what do you think? What do you guys think? Which interpretation of Nitirusa Yaseirsa does this story seem to support?
The Amalia, right?
Yeah. Who's on the phone, by the way? Who's our phone call?
Sorry, it's me, Gabe. I'm just trying to figure out how to sync my two audio inputs.
Got it. So Adin's right. Adin, you think this supports the view that what? What do you mean by Ma'aliyah?
Like, this isn't just like greater than a Shomer Chinam or like, he's clearly held to a standard that's like above and beyond a normal Bilim expectation.
Well, not clearly more than a Bilim expectation, but even more than that, right?
Yeah, so it'd be like the degree at which it's like being disjointed from the Bilim standard, which is that even like, so that if there's a question of a Shomer Chinam, like what standard is, like what's the exact standard there, but clearly this is like far beyond what a normal person would be expected to do, that sounds like Shmir Mali, like the best possible thing you could do.
Yeah, I agree with your conclusion. I would just say a little more. I would say that from the way the facts of the case are presented to us, it sounds like no one takes these animals one by one. Assuming yedat bibar achtech de matzul mevar chadachada. Rashi there said, did I put Rashi here? No. I should have added this Rashi. Rashi on the Gemara there says, let me just pull this out. Rashi on Sadi Gimel said, Kilomar beben amcha v'umasecha. Like, you don't know, there's not a single Jew out there who takes their animals one by one over the bridge. If that's true, then Rav Papa is holding this Roeh to something far beyond the standard of care amongst anyone, even amongst Shomrim. Like, there's not a single Shomer who does this. Everybody agree with that?
And we're saying that's Me'elia, as opposed to Yisei Rasa, which would have been maybe the standard for the Shomer who are paid.
Exactly. It sounds like you're held to this like standard of excellence, regardless of what anybody else in the world does, right? If you could have prevented this, then you ought to prevent it. And that's the standard of the,
presumably like, but say like, oh, that
it's
no.
Like, it's like Cole's been pushing the Conti and ought implies can. So here's the opposite. It's can implies ought, right? So it's like, if there's some measure that can be taken as a Shomer Sakha, then you ought to take it. Sorry. It's not, yes, exactly. Okay.
But making that, like, presumably other Shomrei Sachar are held to the same, like, isn't it an impossible, like, compare, like, oh, no Shomer does this, but, like, presumably every Shomer Sachar should be you're held to a standard higher than any, like, the limits of theoretical possibility that no one's even ever considered or thought of, like, that's what you're, like, that seems, like, extreme to say that that's what you'd be chayav for.
Right, well, isn't that what the Gemara seems to be, isn't that what Rapapa seems to be doing here? Yadat bebei bebarachtech dematzul mebarachadachadu. If Rapapa concedes this point, that no, Rashi said, like, no Jew does this, right? Do you know a single bar amcho bar umasecha who does this? And no one does, right? So Rapapa still is holding him liable.
Yeah, it was like, I think I'm just taking issue with, like you said, oh, no Shomer does this. Like, presume, like it has to be that if this is the standard that Shomer marks, like no one would do this with their own stuff. Like, I think I'm more, like, no one would do this with their own stuff. Like, okay. No one's careful with their, with, like, I, like, no one's this careful with their own things. So, like, I don't know.
Michelle Ahem, you're saying.
Yeah, like, if I'm folding my laundry, no one, like, no person, like, make sure that the crease is exactly lined up on the whatever, but if I'm paying someone to do my laundry, that's what I expect.
Okay, but notice that seems to be reading more into the fact, into the facts as they're given to us, right? I think the way the Gemara presents it to us, it sounds like nobody does this.
Yeah.
Gabe, you have a hand on this?
Is, you read this as a point about duties or liabilities. Like, is this saying that, like, Erhop is expecting the Shomer to do this level of Shmira, or just because it's possible to have done greater Shmira, therefore you're liable for that level of Shmira? Yeah.
Good question. I remember last Kabura Zolti was pushing this point a little bit, right? Like, maybe Chiyuv here is liability, but not necessarily in terms of Chiyuv Shmira. It's a good question. I think that we're, the Gemara is not actually clear about which one of those possibilities it is. I do think, though, from the fact that it's lenturili nitivusa yisersa, if this story is an explication of that, then it seems to be at the standard of Shmira, just from that, for it, like from the way it's formulated in the Gemara. Now, which Rishon reinterprets the story?
The Meiri.
Yeah, our good friend the Meiri, right? You could see he's uncomfortable with this strong reading of the Gemara, of the story. And I think he's Lishi Tasso, actually. I think the Meiri might be Lishi Tasso. So Zachariah, tell us about how the Meiri rereads this story.
Sure. Right. Just the context of the Meiri is he thinks we pass in like Rabba. That is, that's important.
Yeah, initially. His own view. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though he admits he's going against like the Rambam and the Rif, which is kind of interesting for the Meiri.
Yeah, yeah. The Meiri is the man, as you can tell. Yeah. But let me just say something. I think the Meiri is Lishi Tasso here, because throughout the piece, the Meiri is the one who said that Rabba was just fixing the Shomer Sachar standard to the Shomer Chinam standard, to the Shmiras Anoshim B'Shelahem standard, right? So Rabba was giving us a very, so the Meiri was saying that Rabba is doing this very low thing. It's very possible that the Meiri himself is just saying, this is the Meiri saying that these other Amoraim are just bumping it up a notch, right? Beyond Shmiras Hanashim B'Shelahem. I mean, the Meiri himself could have gone either ways. And I think there's actually something that's a little in tension with this reading in the Meiri, which I'll get to in a minute. But Zachariah, tell us about how he reads the Barabbas Sabula story.
Right. So he reads the case. So he says, about myself named Chamin, Vedanu Lechiv, Vedesha Hailo, Lavir, and Akasapas. Okay. Vedavar Zet. But then the retort is, Vedavar Zet, ain't derech b'nei adab la'asos b'shelahem, Cain. So he reads the response as, no person treats their own animals this way. Nikol Makom, Efshar Shazet Hadavar Matzoi, Umisha Eno Osa b'shelo Cain, Poshea ba'atmo. And it views kind of Rav Papa's response as conveying to some extent that, listen, it's done somewhat that people cross their own animals, cross the bridge one by one. And okay, granted that some other people don't do this, but they're just being negligent with themselves. So therefore, by the standard of what people do, b'shelahem, we're going to have to require la'avur echad echad.
Yeah. So the Meiri makes the move that Adin was suggesting, which is A, to relativize this case to do you know anybody barachdech means bishalahem, right? Do they do this for their own stuff? Not that there are no shomrim out there who don't do this at all, that there are no shomrim who do this at all. And then the Meiri is explicit about this, right? About kol she'enam. So he says maybe people don't do this with their own stuff, but they act negligently with their own stuff when they fail to do this, right? Which is an interesting way of putting it. So the idea is that, like, to use an example, maybe most people drive their car in the snow, right? But like, they act foolishly when they do that, maybe, right? Because they know they're taking a risk. Shomer Sachar is held to a higher standard. Now, the Meiri also says, "Aval kol she'eno matzli kol kach doma le'ones hagamur." So he really cuts down the significance of the story, right? So like, if it's really the case that it's eno matzoi kol kach for anybody to take their animals chada chada, or for any shepherd to do it, and we wouldn't say that somebody who does that with their own thing, who takes their own stuff and mass over the bridge, is poshea ba'atzmam, then of course that would be a winning taina to pop to yourself. Right, Zachariah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what the Meiri is doing here is clearly providing a threshold cutoff that even Nitirusa Yisersa is really about, you know, what's considered normal in the industry, in society. It's not this like really high threshold of anything that you could have prevented, right? He, as he says over here, kol she'eino matzei kol kach is dome le'ones ha'gamur. So, you know, if nobody puts a club, or it's eino matzei kol kach, you know, people used to put clubs on their car to stop them from being stolen. You know what I'm talking about? So if that's not done anymore, then like the shomer can't be liable for not doing that. Even though there, I guess there are some crazy people who still put clubs on their cars, things like that.
Just to like clarify, the Meiri isn't going within Shitas Rav Chisda. He is trying to justify what is the standard of Kedinatri Inchi. As in he's saying that Kedinatri Inchi, well, who's the Inchi? Do we view just everyone has to do this? No, it's like as long as there are some people, enough people who do this, and the people who don't do it are negligent, well, we're going to go after the more careful Inchi. I agree with you. You could still medayek from the last line that, okay, fine, maybe the fact that he says if no one does it, it's onus gamur, that even the Meiri's Netiria Seira wouldn't qualify. But he clearly wants to go within Rava here.
I disagree. I think the Meiri is clearly working within Rav Chisda. Because over here, he says, let me see the chat for a second. Oh, Gabe. I don't know why club picking stopped. It's a good question. I know my parents used to use a club, like maybe they still do.
Club picking? What?
You know, people used to lock a club in their car so that you couldn't turn the wheel to protect from being stolen.
Huh?
What?
I'll put a picture in the chat. Cars in Bethesda.
Is that it, Dan?
A club to hit somebody with?
I've never heard it called a club before, but I know what you're talking about.
What do you hear it called then?
What would they do?
I just saw it in my grandmother's car. I never heard it called anything.
Yeah. It's like this red, it's like this metal thing with like rubber red ends that you put it on the steering wheel. You lock it so that even if somebody broke into your car, they wouldn't be able to turn the steering wheel. Like it would give it.
Yeah, I never saw such a thing.
It's interesting. He clearly didn't grow up in the inner city.
No, I never heard of a car getting stolen in my neighborhood.
Wow. Cool.
There was no crime in my neighborhood.
Yeah. Got it.
Just to like bring this back, we didn't get to there yet, but like there's a very interesting Gemara about like the ratcheting game of cat and mouse between the Ganavim and the Shomrim. It's like, oh, you have to bury it. No, everyone goes with metal detectors now. Okay, you got to hide in your roof. No, people break into roofs all the time. It's like, you got to put in the walls. Like, no, people have like developed a wall tapping technique.
The Ganavim are always one step behind, you know?
Yeah, or so one step ahead.
They always have to change the standard of Shmira. But I think Zachary, I disagree, because I think it's clear from the Meiri that he's within this Gedolei HaPoskim VaMechaberim view. That's the Rambam and the Rif. Notam Adashlisha Shishomer Kol Shahaya Afshelo Lishmar B'derech Shelo Haya Ones B'Chayiv. And then he says LeInyan Masha Pasku. He's quoting their Shita. Hey Mivin Raya Masha Amru. Right, the story of the case. And then he says. They bring a raya, and he's just explicating their raya here. So I think the Meiri is even in this part is working within the Netirusa Yasersa standard. Do you see that, Zachary? Anybody else have thoughts on this?
So in the non Meiri reading, like the one that you were suggesting earlier.
One second. I'm going to say one more thing. On the Rabba view, I think the Meiri would say the Shomer is Patur. So long as he does whatever Bailim do Bishalahem. See that, Zacharia?
Yeah, I'm just rereading the whole thing a second.
Yeah, go ahead, Adin.
So within a non, like, upper bounded view of Netirusa Yesersa, is it that, like, the Meir seems more reasonable to say that, so, like, the Baal HaBayis can, like, as long as we can find some way possible. No one's ever heard of it. No one's ever thought of it. But ex post facto. Oh, clearly, if you had just done X, like it seems like everything short of a lightning strike. And even then, oh, you could have put it in a wooden shed or something like that. Like, like there obviously there has to be some sort of upper bound, and so like that determinant of the upper bound is kind of like industry standard, or even this is like the high industry standard, like the thing the most careful shepherds do X, but no one, you'd be insane to do any further than that. So like is it just lightning strike that you're putter from in B, like what's the logic for being putter from anything less than that without the Meiri's bound?
Yeah, the logic would be that, kind of like Gabe was saying throughout, that once you're Shomer Sachar, like you're expected to do like the maximum possible Shmira available to you, and anything short of that will result in your liability.
But that's like, look, if we're saying literally anything, literally everything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, we'll see. Rishonim have something to say. That'll be our next section, actually. Look at the Meiri says here, for example. When he explains the Rav Chisda view, he says, here, of the Dash Shlishis, Sheshomer Sachar Kol Shehaya Efshar Lo Lishmor B'Derach Shelo Haya Onis Ba Chayiv. Remember the Raman Mor Nevuchim, right? There's like Ein Tachbula Limona, right? Like there's no stratagem that would have prevented the Ones. So Kol Shehaya Efshar Lo Lishmor B'Derach Shelo Haya Onis Ba Chayiv. Like that would be the really high standard. For Nitzi,
but yeah, I'm just scared. Like maybe
that would be like the objective excellence, you know, yeah. Shmir Alia standard.
But presumably, there's always some sort of shmir that would have prevented what we would tend to call ones. If lightning struck, I could have put it in a wooden box, and if a strong wind blew, I could have tied it down with 80 pound weights or whatever.
I agree. I think I mentioned like the law and economics people point out that, you know, any shmira is possible as long as you have infinite resources. Right, you know, it's
the Gemara even like admits to that with the lion case, where it's like, oh yeah, if I had like enough money to buy a gang of, you know, hitmen, we could have taken care of the lion. So it's not an oni. Like there's
yeah. So it's got to be tethered to some degree of reasonableness. But I think this formulation though leans, you know, gives you a sense, Dan, of what the Meiri maximum standard looks like, right?
Yeah. I guess maybe it requires like internal fleshing out of like you said, there has to be some bound. So I think that you're just suggesting a very reasonable one.
Yeah. So let's go back to this. You see, so Zachariah, you still think you and Yakir both think that the Meiri, so let me just get this right. You're suggesting the Meiri here is saying this is the proof for the Rav Chisda view. Okay. And then when he says the Umikal Makom, that's like his way of reading the story. Meaning, like, maybe the story's not a raya for them, because Efshar Shazad Dabar Matsui, Umisha Eno Ose Bishalo Kain, Hoshea Ba'atzmo. You think that could work within Shitas Rabba? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
So like here, you think this point, the Mikol Makom, is basically his view. And then.
Yeah, that's just a parenthetical, what you're highlighting now.
So it would read like this. So he's saying like, well, how do I deal with this? I'm a Rava person, right? So Natri Inchi is sufficient. So what he has to say is like, Natri Inchi when it's reasonable, not when people take foolish risks with their own stuff. Is that the idea, Yakir? Yakir, that's the idea?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, he's saying Efshar Shazad Aramatsa. He's saying that maybe this is like he's arguing on the Matias. It sounds like he's saying that maybe this is not Kidinatri Inchi. It's Matsui enough, such that it fulfills the standard of Kidinatri Inchi. And even though it's clear from the story that lots of people also don't do it, that's their Poshe Batsmo.
And he's willing to say no matzli kolkach if like meaning if what does this mean? If not enough people take the precaution, then it'll be like an ones gamur. Meaning because it's inchi. Even if it's foolish, right? Or he's not sure about that.
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. Is that what you're thinking also, Zakaria? Is that how you're reading the Mikamakam, that those are parenthetic remarks?
I'm not sure. I have to go back and read it again. But it sounds about right. I definitely remember being very convinced that he was trying to justify this for the Rava position.
Anybody else have thoughts? This is a really important issue, because if the Meiri is qualifying the Rav Chisda view here, it's a really important qualification on the Rav Chisda view. Let me just say this. I think one thing that should motivate the Yakir and Zakaria reading of the Meiri is that here, when the Meiri talks about Nitirusa Yasera, let me just pull this out again. He says, when he talks about the Nitirusa Yasera standard, he says, Kol Shahaya Avshalo Lishmar Bederach Shalohaya Ones Bachayev. Right, which is a real, that's like the objectively really high standard. Just a formulation, right? It sounds like anything, any precaution you could have taken would make you lie, that you didn't take, you'd be liable. But then if he's qualifying the Rapapa story based off like, oh, what do people do? Kol she'eino matzei kol kach doma l'ones hagamor, that seems inconsistent with the way he portrayed the Rav Chisda a moment ago, which is totally independent of any standard that people, even shomrim, exercise. It's about this objective thing. Were you able to take precaution? So if on my reading, there's this problem about the way he characterizes the Rav Chisda view as absolute shmira, any precaution you could have taken, versus his qualification of the Rapapa case, where he seems to say that so long as you're within some standard of care, that's going to exempt you. Does anybody see that problem on for my read? Yeah. Everybody see that problem? Thoughts on it? No?
Yeah, I think that might have been what was Machria Noah and I towards this reading.
Yeah. All right, we should think more about this this Miri then, because it's a little trickier than I thought. I think you guys might be right. Because I was bothered by the different formulations of the, you know, the Rapapa view versus the Rava view. Okay. You have to think about it more. Gabe, you have thoughts on this? No, you're good? Okay. Great. Let's see that. Cole, you want to be seen. Okay. Good. So let's move now to this really excellent and cool Marshach, Chelek Beisim and Kuf Samach Tes. Great story and really novel legal conclusion. So we had seen a tshuva of the Marshach earlier. Marshach had one of the good tshuvas about Minhag HaSochrim from the beginning of the year. He's the one with, I think he had the tshuva of the two Venetian merchants who had this dispute about whether they had this partnership, and there was machlokas whether to judge it according to Din Torah or Kifi Minag Venetia. And he said the business deal would be incoherent according to Din Torah. He'd be Meniach Mosav al Keren HaTzvi. So it's got to be judged according to the Minag Sochrei Venetia. Here we have this really great Marshach, Chelek Beis Kuf Samech Tes. Anybody want to walk us through the tshuva here? Anybody had a chance to prepare it? Volunteers?
Yeah.
Go for it, Cole.
So, let me just open it on my computer. So I think there was this, I forget the cast of characters exactly, but there was a picadon that this one person left with another. And I think the main thing for our sugya is that when the mafkid left the item with the shomer, the nifkad like showed the mafkid and it showed the mafkid like the spot or the place that it was going to be guarded in, or that it was going to be kept in. And so when the item was lost or damaged, I forget which.
Stolen by the Shifka.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Who then appeared to have been murdered by her handlers, if I understood the story right.
Oh, okay.
And no questions are asked about that. Just the Mashkon.
We're just here for law. We're not like Rav Meidan, you know, like asking questions about why the anyway. So yeah, and I guess the Kiddush of the Maharshach is that the fact that the Nifka, the Mafkid, excuse me, was like aware of the physical Shmira situation constitutes this kind of like quasi Tanai or Mechila or something.
Yeah, that's
like
one really interesting part of the ruling. That's right.
Right. And then
interesting.
So like legally, is there another Kiddush of the?
Yes, there's a huge Kiddush. The
Dafkam and Nothin Lestar Behedya. Oh yeah, right. You have to like explicitly pay the, in order for the, so I didn't know that there was this like dispute in the Gemara about whether the, maybe I did know and just forgot about whether the, whether a creditor on a loan secured by a collateral counts as a Shomer Sachar or not. And I guess the conclusion is, I guess the end here, Dafka Vinosin Lo Schar Behedya Bad Shmiraso. You need to compensate the person for the Shmira itself. I guess the thinking here is that there's evidence in Chazal for this, like in the Sugya and Gittin, about why loans secured by a mashkon are immune from shmitaization, that like the payment, the repayment on the loan actually like purchases the mashkon in return. So you might
hold off on the Gittin part of it. Why is he worried about the why does he care about the payment, whether Shomer Sachar is paid cold? Did you catch that?
Like because you need a higher level of Shmira if yes, right?
Good. What he's worried, the crucial thing for us, wants to know whether this woman is a Shomer Chinam or a Shomer Sachar. In the first part of his analysis, he assumes she's a Shomer Chinam. And then he's like, well, and so he has an argument why she should be plotter as a Shomer Chinam. But then he says, let's assume arguendo that she's a Shomer Sachar. I could still show that she's Pater. Why? Because the Gemara's higher standard of Netirusa Yisersa is tethered to the fact that she's being compensated, that the Shomer is being compensated for the services, right? The Gemara said, I'm paying you extra so that you will exercise this higher degree of Shmira. And the Marshach wants to contend that you could have cases of a Shomer Sachar who's considered a Shomer Sachar because of some benefit they derive from the item, but is not held to this higher standard of that a Shomer Sachar is generally held to if they're not being compensated explicitly for your job. Right, Cole? That's a Moradik Echidish, right?
That you can split the Ramata Shmira question from other Shomer Sachar Dinim?
Exactly. Meaning this standard of Shmira question is not a Shomer Sachar question per se. It's about the particular construction of a specific kind of Shomer Sachar relationship. So explicitly is going to be held to this higher standard of Shmira. A Shomer Sachar is not paid explicitly is going to be held to a lower standard of the Shmira, which is quite extraordinary. The Gemara, there's nothing in the Gemara to support that. The Gemara is going to be asking, what's a Shomer Sachar held to, except for the Gemara's rationale of Lahachi Yavi Lachagri Yisera. Do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like a very circumstantial reading of Machia Havele Agra Yisira. Like, well, we literally mean that's what, in the context where the reason I paid you extra is to do Shmira, then we hold you to a higher standard, rather than
exactly.
I name a category of Shomer Safar.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild Kiddush, and you could see if you saw the Mishnah Melech, the Mishnah Melech quotes the Marshach, and he says, you know, Uve'ena Yifla, am I polygle b'hai milsa v'inasa Shomer Safar, Mishim Hai, kol dinei Shomer Safar alav. If you're a Shomer Safar, you're a Shomer Safar, and you have all the rules of a Shomer Safar. What's this thing about some Shomeri Safar being held to Nativus Yisirsa, other Shomeri Safar not? See, the Marshach's argument is when the Gemara says, Mishum Damar Le L'Hachi Yavis Chagrin Turi Nativus Yisirsa, Davka B'Nosein L'Schar B'Hedjia B'Ad Shmirasa. Here's the Vadai rule again. Pretty incredible Kiddush. Anybody have, yes, so Gabe, I agree with you. And you see, I think the Mishnah Melech is sympathetic to your point also.
This gets into a conversation we had last week, I think, about the relationship between a Sochar and a Shomer Sachar and whether those are really the same category and whether...
Yes. Go ahead, Gabe. Say same
word. Whether all Shomer Sachar... What we really mean when we say Shomer Sachar is that there's like it's a broad category of people who are exchanging Shmira for something else, or is a very particular definition of Shomer Sachar, which would exclude other kinds of transactions or exchanges of goods and services.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder why we wouldn't call this a socher, maybe. Like, a shomer, I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'll end my point there.
Well, but remember, a socher has the same din of a shomer safar, right?
Right, but not for the same reasons. And so perhaps, like, a nafkamina might be what the expectations of Shmira are. Like, what is the reason that you've hired a socher? There is an exchange of goods.
Okay, well, here's a practical question for you, Gabe. Is a socher held Nativusa Yisirsa?
So the Marshach would assume not.
Yeah, good. And the Psalm Sofer draws that.
Wait, why not? A socher is paid.
No, a socher is a renter.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was. I thought you said.
Right.
You said socher. I thought Poel. I'm sorry.
Right. So a socher, right? Not a sahir. A
Sochar
pays to use the item, but he has all the liability rules of a Shomer Safar, at least according to the Dan Tanan that we pass. And we'll talk more about that. But the Chassam Sofer quotes his Marshach, not explicitly, he says, Amru mina kadmonim, de Shomer aveda v'chayotze bo, af agav shehu kish Shomer Safar, mikom bakom eino mamish kish Shomer Safar le kabuli alei netiusi yisersa. De hasam ika taima, which is very interesting. So the Chassam Sofer says this argument of the Marshach would extend to all cases of people who have the formal liability rules of Shomer Sachars without being compensated explicitly for Shmira, like a Shomer Aveda, who at least according to one being the Gemara is a Shomer Sachar, Malvel Amashkan, like the Marshach's case. And then the Chassam Sofer says explicitly, Uledivrehem gam hasocher kein, shehu eina mekabel schar. The socher is considered a Shomer Sachar, even though he's not paid. So the Chassam Sofer says that on this analysis, a socher would lo ba yiminei netivusa yisersa, right? He wouldn't be held to his higher standard of netivusa yisera. I want to make a diak here, and then I want to come back to the tshuva of the Marshach for a second. One thing that bothers me about the Chassam Sofer's analysis is what's the relationship between being chayiv for Geneva Va'aveda. We'll come to Gabe's interesting point. What's the relationship between the higher standard of Shmira as captured by the notion of a Shomer Safar being chayav for Gneva Aveda, and this standard of Shmira question of Nitivusa Yaseirsa. You see, one way of reading our Gemara is that our Gemara is just trying to explicate what's the standard of Shmira defined by Achi of Lishmor Mikaneva Vaveda. And then you have Rabba and Rav Chisda disagreeing about whether that's, whether like the Gneva Veda standard is Nitivusa Yaseirsa, or whether it's Kidinatrienchi. Right? What's considered the standard of Shmira that normally protects from Gneva Naveda? Does everybody see how that's like one way of reading our Gemara? And by the way, if you look back in Rashi in our Gemara, Rashi gives off that impression. To come back to those series of Rashis, Rashi kept saying, and so like the Aveda standard of Shmira is like for those, is like is supposed to capture the standard of Nitirusa Yisera, right? It's like a standard of Shmira between Ones and Pshia. Correct? Does everybody see that in Rashi? So like I'm giving you, I'm paying you extra. It's not Ones. It's not Pshia. So like the Nitirusa Yaseirsa standard is supposed to capture this level of Aveda liability. Similarly, Tosos in our Sugya, Tosos on the case of the Bar Sabulai with the Havlecha Liburi Chada Chada, he says, oh, this is not Pshia. Ela Kein Gneva Vaveda. Umechayev Mitaimed Adaita Dahachi Yehibn Lucha Agna Detintali Nitirusa Yaseirsa. So you get the sense that like the, oh, you didn't take the animals one by one. That's like a kind of breach of Shmira at the Gneva Vaveda standard, which is captured by this notion of Nitirusa Yaseirsa. Everybody agree with that, Diak, and the way these Rishonim are conceptualizing Gneva Veda and its relationship. So on this view, I think Nitirusa Yaseirsa and Natri Inchi, the Machlokas Amoraim, is intended as an explication of the standard of Shmira that you're supposed to adhere to protect against Gneva Veda. See, the Chasam Sofer clearly is not thinking this way. Because, just to go back to the Chasam Sofer, he says, oh, of course, if you're a socher or a shomer aveda, where you're formally a shomer sachar, so your dinhu lehischaye b'gneva aveda, avalon ischaye bo shmir yisera. So does this assume that the machlokes amoraim is trying to do something else other than define like the Gneva Veda standard? Because the whole point here is that a Shomer Sachar is chayav for Gneva Veda, but then different Shomrei Sachar are held to different standards for Gneva Veda. Does everybody see what I'm getting at? Or is the idea, yeah, that's my point. My point is that can you take Rashi and Tosfos and still have the view of the Marshach and the Chasam Sofer to say that, well, all Shomrei Sachar are chayav for Gneva Veda, but which standard of Gneva Veda we apply will depend on what type of Shomer Sachar you are. So what do you guys think of that? At that point, am I right about this?
It seems correct. I mean, there's just a lot of problems. Like, you can just tie it back to the Gemara, because like there's a problem of like the transitive property here, where like Rabba is saying the Shomer Sachar is the Natri Inchi, okay, and he agrees the Shomer Sachar is Chayav Gneva Veda, okay, but the Natri Inchi is the same standard as the Shomer Chinam. And a Shomer Chinam is Patzer on Gneva Veda. So what's going on here? So I think what the Chassam Sofer is trying to do is he's just emphasizing, like, by the way, there is a nafkamina when you call something a shomer chinam and you call something a shomer sefer, is that there will be cases where the shomer sefer is chayiv. Once we're okay, now that we've established that, you can like ramp up, you can like overclock the shomer sefer to make him chayiv on like 10 more cases, which is shmir yaseira, but that's not. You don't even have to go that far to find an afkamita between a shomer chinam and shomer sefer. That's how I read.
Good. That's
so I'm not going to admit that there are consistency problems in the whole sugya, which I don't think I've solved.
Good. So I take it your point. The main point here that you're making is what we said right off the bat. You're saying that we're going to have a problem. It's going to be problematic to interpret Rabba and Rav Chisda as just trying to give voice to the Gneva Veda standard. I think that's what you're saying, right? So there are really two dinim. There's Chir for Gneva Veda. So there are two separate conceptual questions that have to be asked. One is, like, are you Chayav for Gneva Veda? Are you Chayav for Pshia? Shomer Chinam versus Shomer Sachar? And then within each of those, we have to ask, what's the standard to define Pshia? What's the standard to define Gneva Aveda? And so I guess we'd say, like, Hidinatar Inshi Mi Gneva Aveda, or like something along those lines, right? Like it's like the, what's the, like Gneva Aveda is some standard on its own. And then there are just two ways of holding you liable for Chiyuve Gneva Aveda, something like that. Yeah, it's interesting. Anybody else have thoughts on this? It's very tricky. Thing. Yeah, Kira, do you have thoughts on this?
I need to look more into it. I agree that it's tricky.
Okay. Okay, that's the diag I wanted to get out here. Let me just also say before we move on, I want to make one more ha'ara. Bye-bye, Cole. Yeah, I wanted to talk very briefly about this, the case in the Marshach. So now that Cole's gone, I could say Cole totally did not do justice to the excitement of the case. Just looking for the legal facts, you know? I agree with Evan that, you know, a whole movie could be made out of this Tshuva of the Marshach. And, like, one could argue that, like, whole Dickens novels just really turn on, like, the fact pattern in this Tshuva of the Marshach. You know, they say about like Dostoevsky, about Tolstoy, that there are two interesting Tolstoy. So Anna Karenina, they claim that Tolstoy saw like a painting of a woman and she had like a certain look on her face. And he said that the novel Anna Karenina was just like trying to capture like the look on this woman's face that he saw in this dream or in this painting that he saw. And then he also wrote, I think it was Tolstoy, he wrote a book called A Short Story that's named after like a Tchaikovsky piece. Shua, do you know offhand?
I do not know offhand. I'm not a book in the short stories.
I can't believe I'm blinking on it. Yes, Gabe, that's right. Very good. Very good. Gabe said in the chat, like the Kreutzer Sonata, I think. I think you like Yiddishized it with the. And he said, like, you know, this is just trying to give voice to like the story of like the song over here, something like that. I guess that was just like his, you know, throwaway line whenever somebody asked him about his stories. But anyways, I think something similar could be said about the Marshach here. So the fact pattern here is pretty interesting. He says, Reuven was sitting in a, Reuven and Shimon, I guess, are working together. Reuven's about to be thrown into debtor's prison. Everybody catch that? He says, Reuven says, look, I'm in trouble. Molichin osi la sreini bekivle barzel. Advar sachov shenes chayavdi. So Reuven, like the, you know, he's under pressure here. They're about to lock him up. This, you know, the Marshach lived in 16th century Greece. He's like a shtickle contemporary of the Beis Yosef. So they're going to lock this guy up in debtor's prison. And he turns to Shimon. He's like, Shimon, I need to get cash quick. Do you know anybody who could give me cash? I have a mashkon, like that'll secure the loan, so I could avoid debtor's prison. And then Shimon responds, he's like, hey, I know Rachel, who's like a banker. It sounds like this pikadon here, it's confusing. The pikadon is a pikadon of cash. That's like the way to make sense of it. Like she's watching somebody's money for them. So she's like, if you watch Diesel or something, she's like the Rebbe's an Erblich, you know, she's like, fine, not a money changer, but Rachel here is like, Nimtzeis b'pikadon yudi echad, and from the context of the story, it's pretty clear this is a pikadon of cash. Shimon says, I'll go, and I'll convince her to give up some of that pikadon to you in exchange for the mashkon. So she'll lend you some of the money that she's like sitting on, which you'll secure with your mashkon. And Taka, that's what happens, right? Rachel takes the mashkon, she gives him these coins, which she took out from the pikadon. Okay, everybody clear on the facts of the background story? Yeah, okay, good. This is also like Dr. Grach always points out, like, he finds like some Rishonim, they kind of just give you like the legal facts, you know, in the Shiloh. Here there are so many like social facts that are not really, like the fact that he's gonna be thrown in debtor's prison is not relevant to the story. It's just like funny. It's like in all these Bezin cases, like when the parties show up to the hearing, you get like a whole mess. Like you hear like all the gory details of dispute, and like only 5% of those are relevant to like the legal issues at bar. But here, like the Marshach gives us like the whole narrative. Now, Uva'od Hayom Gadol, Shimon now wants to secure his mashkon, so he wants to pay back Rachel, but he doesn't have the full amount, so he's missing a grush echad. Right, so I guess let's say he borrowed $1,000, he now has 950 to pay back. But Rachel, who was watching this money as a pikadon, won't give him back the mashkon until he pays her in full, because she says the money is a pikadon meisha acher. Any rasha lahosi misham pruta achas b'li rishuso. Ata she'asra nilachzera pikadon labaylo ma yomar ma yachshav alai. Actually not clear if Rachel was allowed to like give him this money in the first place, right? Like suddenly now she's like all prickly about how, you know, I can't take
back. Makes the movie so much better. Like she had to make the moral decision to give the money in the first place. Great.
Right, to get the guy out of debtor's prison. Also pretty cool that Rachel is like pulling the strings in this, right, in this whole scenario. It's like, who is she, right? Like, who's like the woman money lender in 16th century Greece? And then this is an interesting part that's relevant for part of his analysis. She says to him, also like, what's the big deal? Why do you need your mashkon back right away? Akitashu tira mashkoncha arucha bakol ushmura b'makam hamos mamish. He's like, don't worry, your mashkon is in the safe with the cash itself. Like, you don't need to get it back right away. Come pay me in full and I'll give it back to you. So, of course, Shimon goes home. Vayehi halayla. Now, what happened? So, there's the aggrieved Shifcha of Rachel. So, we have a new dramatis personae entering the story. So, I guess Rachel wasn't treating her Shifcha well, or either the Shifcha fell into bad company. And Vatigno veskol kli besa besocham hapikadon ima mashkon asher sham. Rachel was wiped clean by the Shifcha. The Shifcha stole not only the mashkon, but also the pikadon. U'od shloshas yamim, matzu ha-shifcha she-shachtu ha-meisiseha mushleches baret. This is what I was saying before. It sounds like the Shifcha had handlers who turned on her and killed her. Right? Am I reading this correctly? I think so, right?
100%.
What do you say, Evan?
I mean, I just read it a lot more dramatically, but yeah, it seems that there's a lot of moving parts. But
yeah, especially this part about the Sheshachtua Mesisa. It's also not really clear why it's relevant to the story. I guess unless Rachel was trying to recover from the Shifcha. But the idea is that, right, like, you know, they're not going to get anything out of her. Sure. Yeah, like, sure, you ask him about the story here?
It's wild. It's actually wild.
Good, good. Yeah, Garner.
And obviously the prose is lovely too.
That's right. I mean, and the good thing is that, like, the legal chiddush is also pretty shocking, right? I mean, the legal chiddush about the mashkon part, about the two types of shomer slachars part. I mean, obviously, that chiddush doesn't bear or tie directly to the excitement in the story. But I guess, you know, for an exciting story, you need an exciting legal conclusion. So, you know. So Marshak here says, Rachel is left with nothing. She doesn't have any, you know, she's left like the Irum, Uvachoser kol mikol kli besa me'apikana me'amashkom. So now the legal shaila is whether Rachel is chayav to reimburse Shimon for the mashkon that was stolen from her. Evan, you had a hand?
Yeah, is the fact that the money was, I know it begins as stolen from Rachel, but that at like the end of the day, it's sort of in the, I guess maybe Ava, like it was destroyed. Does that like change anything? I know like later on, we're gonna sort of get into like, it sort of seems as if like Pshat is, we're just dealing with like, from Rachel's perspective, it was just stolen. But when you said like, oh, what's like the point of including this whole story about the ship, is there any like reasoning, or would that affect anything?
Yeah, I don't think so. My sense is that it doesn't really. My sense is that he's still treating this as a classic Neva case. That's my sense from the Tshuva. So he says, I think in the beginning, he's working with the assumption that Rachel is a Shomer Chinam. It's two views in the Gemara, whether a Malvel, a Mashkon is a Shomer Chinam or a Shomer Safar. We'll talk about why, it doesn't matter for our purposes right now, why the Malvel Mashkon is characterized as Shomer Safar, the Prut of Rav Yossi. But right now he's assuming, let's assume she's a Shomer Chinam. So he says she's going to be Pater, Yesh Lifter of the Rachel, Shekefi Hanirim Imrusas Hashela Rachel Hanis Keres, Shamra Hachefetz Ba'ofen Maspik Li Pater. She abided by the relevant standard of Shmira. Basically, she put it in the safe. And if you put it in the safe, that's enough for a Shomer Chinam to pater himself. And he quotes these Rishonim who basically say that you got to abide by what's normal for putting money away. Like you saw that, you all saw the Sugyan Membeis already. You know, you just got to put it away, bikarka. Minicham b'makom sheminiach moza. You know, when you're a shomer, you got to put the other person's money where you keep your money, right? Which is, you know, a reasonable standard. And he says she definitely did that here. So as a shomer chinam, she should definitely be pater.
Right. So nice, like the natri inchi kind of point.
Exactly. It's exactly a natri inchi point, 100%. Which is an interesting, the reason why I'm going through this now is because this is relevant for the way we're going to analyze that Mishnah on Membeis. You see, he's really working with that Sugya Membeis over here. I don't know if you caught that. He said, this Rebart Saloni, Ein Shmira L'Ksaf Mel Bekarka, that's all about interpreting the Sugya Membeis. Okay. But then he has a second reason to pater Rachel. So let's call this reason. So reason number one is Natri Inchi, let's say, for Shomer Chinam. Reason number two is, let's call this Mechila, or Tanai, or Assumption of Risk. He thinks, the Marshak thinks that when Rachel said, like, what are you hacking me a chinik to get it back today? You could always just come tomorrow and look how safe it is. Right? Come look how safe it is. It's here. He says the fact that the Loved didn't object to the Shmira shows that he consented to that standard of Shmira. Now I think this is important because the Marshak is the first one to explicitly say that, you know, we could just view the standard of Shmira as either a Tanai or an implied Tanai. So he says over here, it's Kehera lo makam ha-Shmira. Hakol lefitzno. So, Kivan shelo pasha ba'ofen ha-Shmira, blah, blah, blah. So she showed him where she was watching it. It's like a Tanai. And only a Shomer Sachar is held to a high standard of Nitirusa Yisirsa. Now, what's not clear to me is if he's thinking that this Tanai argument wouldn't work if she was held to a Nitirusa Yisirsa standard. He says, oh, it's a Mar Makam. She shows him the Makam Ashmira. So it's Hakol Afi Tanao. And since it was
later on, he says that even if it was Shomer Sachar, that was, the Tanai would still work. Yeah, that in somewhere.
Here,
right?
Yeah, here he says it. Here, let's see. Over here he says, here, Afilu im Timsa Lomar Dahava Shomer Sachar, Kivan Sherachel Harasa Lashimon Makam Hashmir of Inisratzabo, Havala Kilu Hisna Beferosh. Or that's where he's, Evan, that's what you're saying, right? Yeah, good. So at this point,
this is the point I put on the chat earlier, which is that the Marshach's Mahalach only works if we're assuming Nitirusa Yisirasa is about expectations, the mutual expectations between the two parties, and not if we're working on an absolutist understanding of Nitirusa Yisirasa.
Yes, unless though, see Gabe, unless the point is that this was all superseded by some consent through the Mar and Makom Lo and the Tanai. So it wouldn't be like the baseline chiyuv of a Shomer. Like there, he's saying, oh, normally the Shomer would be held to Nitirusa Yisera. But here there was some sort of consent through the Mar Heralo Makom. So you can make that argument. So all this is really interesting. And a lot of this we have to come back to in our next Sugin Membeis. And then he throws in his last answer is the one that was relevant for this discussion about the Tzvei Dinim in Shomer Sachar, that it's only when you're actually compensated that you're held to Nitirusa Yisirsa. And I think it's a bit of an open question about, you know, it sounds throughout, and this guy, I guess this is my response, this is like my response to Gabe's point, it actually sounds to me that he thinks that on the merits of Nitirusa Yisirsa alone, she would have been chayiv. And the reason to pater her is either because of the overriding tanai, which is, see, he says over here like this. What about only a Shomer Sachar is held to Agra Nitirusa Yisirsa. She's a Shomer Chinam, so she's pater. And I says, oh, well, even if she's a Shomer Sachar, which implies that he thinks actually Nitirusa Yisirsa is higher than this. And even if she is held, even if the Mechila didn't work, and so that she would be held to Nitirusa Yisirsa, she's not a normal Shomer Sachar who's paid for her Shmira. That's the structure of his answer. So Gabe, I actually think now that he may be going for the absolute standard. You see that? Barring the Nisratzabo event. Or he just thinks that locking it up with the other stuff is, you know, just for whatever reason doesn't meet the standard of Shomrei Sachar. So we could revisit this in the Marshach. What?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't hear everything that you said, but I.
Why is Meital home? First of all, why is Meital home today?
It was a snow day.
Is it snowing in Cleveland?
Yeah, we were supposed to get more than we did. I don't know. They changed the rules. They call snow days at night instead of in the morning, which seems like a mistake because the forecasting isn't so good. But the Marshaks. Approach about defining Shomer Sachar based off of whether the explicit terms of the contract were clear or not, to me, points to an expectations definition of Nitirusa Yisirsa, because it's dependent on what the terms of the contract were, not some kind of like metaphysical liability that you accept upon yourself.
But bear in mind, Gabe, Bear in mind that in this case, this isn't like the moment of the agreement. It was like a later event where he came to take back the mashkon, right? And then she said, hey, look, it's in the safe. It's all good. And he's thinking that event might have superseded the original standard of Nitiusa Ysterissa.
You know, so I agree in the Harlow-Malcolm line of reasoning, but not in the last line of reasoning where he's not considered to be a Shomersa. I think that can be decoupled from the last paragraph about Shomer Sachar for Shmira or Shomer Sachar.
Interesting. I hear that. Zacharia, you have a...
Yeah, I don't want to keep it too long, but just pretty much in short, the way when I read this was that he used the Gemara very literally, that the conclusion of the Gemara is, oh, the reason I'm paying you is must be because I want you to do extra Shmira. So, in short, Marshak believes Netira Yisera is an objective standard. It is like whatever, what people do for their own stuff, plus one. That's an objective thing. However, the only reason that a Shomer is has a duty to do such a thing is because that's the expectation. That's the unspoken expectation. When I give you money, I want you to do more to do if I didn't give you money. And so when he says Netira Yisera, he is referring to an objective line only enforced because of the expectation of the agreement.
Yes, I agree with that.
Which
I agree
makes a lot, which works very well with the last part, which is that you could totally just drop it or have it. It's not a fundamental part of being a Torah Shomer Sachar. It's just it's a kind of like a stop.
Yeah, good. I think that definitely makes a lot of sense. It's not constitutive of the Shomer Sachar. It's the umdana created by, or the expectation created by the Nitiusa Ysterissa. Then there's this separate question, which I think you and Gabe are on different sides of. If it's the umdana that creates the expectation of Nitiusa Ysterissa, is the umdana that now you're held to this like absolute degree of Shmira, or just kind of something, you know, I guess some reasonable expectations, you know, the going standard, which would be like almost like a Metzias question if it's all just like, what are they agreeing to? Okay, so for next time, what we want to look at is the Makoro starting on page 21, the Mishnah Membeis. It's not clear from the Mishnah whether the standards set out there are Shomer Chinam. Do they also apply to Shomer Safars? Shomrei Sachar. The Rishonim are all over this question. And this takes an explicit stand on what Nitiusa Ysterissa is. Like, what's the standard that a Shomer is? Is it this objective standard? Basically, under what conditions can a Shomer Sachar say that he discharged his Shmira obligations and should no longer be Chayiv? So we want to read the Mishnah there, the Gemara there from the source sheet. The most important Rishon that I want to cover, take a look at this Tosos. I'll add, there are other Tosos in that make similar points. I'll add a few Tosos in. Basically, I want to just focus on the Ramban on Thursday. The Ramban on Membeis Lamed Aleph. Hafoch ba vafoch ba dekula ba. Well, obviously there are other Shitas that disagree with the Ramban, but like the Ramban here is like the Mara Deshmaitza. You can really see he's trying to like figure out the different parts of the Sugya, and he has some really interesting suggestions. So, you know, prepare like the Tosas background, the Gemara background. Try to be familiar a little bit with like the discussion here about Tainas Ganav Bipikadon, Toin Tainas Ganav Shomer Sachar Kribi Chayav Kefel. That's like the background evidence that's being thrown around by the different Rishonim. But I want to nail down the Ramban on Thursday. It shouldn't take us long to get through like the Ritva and Rashba also, because they're just, you know, disagreeing here and there with the Ramban. But that should be our discussion for Thursday. All right. Shkoyach, everyone. See you in 2 days. Take care. Yeah. Bye-bye.